The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Sudo waited until she could hear a steady rhythm in Etta's heavy snoring. She counted the repetitions of her breath and listened for breaks in the pattern.
No medical records regarding apnea or somnambulant behavior. Pulse is most likely at 64 beats per minute. REM sleep in less than 3 minutes.
Sudo calculated in her mind. The chronicler reached under her sleeping roll, fumbling around in the dark until her fingers brushed the acrylic lenses of the goggles on her mask. She rose from her bedroll, careful not to brush any stray sediment that would awaken Etta, and stretched the mask over her face, tucking in fringes of dirty brown hair that would otherwise be pulled out from the friction of the rubber on her scalp. The brick wall cover was only waist high, but provided plenty of cover for travelers to camp off the side of the road. Its neglected, wrought iron hoops held fast in their cement collars, rusted over from infrequent rain showers across the desert. Sudo nimbly vaulted over the wall and headed for the cactus Etta had eaten behind earlier. Her keen ears had heard Etta's mention of a scrapper before they bedded down, and if one was this far out bringing a haul back, it was a mandatory directive to at least try and flag them down for trade. Sudo adjusted the brightness of her digital pad display enough so that it mimicked an e-torch at full power. Her fast fingers dialed in a repeating pattern of flashes, an archaic code from the bygone peoples deciphered from fragments of the stream and clusters across the continent. Sudo didn't know exactly what the pattern was saying, but was willing to take the chance for a decent trade outside the city. She held her whole arm up, the display illuminating a dozen meters or so in front of her, blinking like a beacon in the night.
Bring me your treasures, Sandworm. Help me fill in the gaps in the database and bring me back to the mainframe once more.
Barter and trade had gained a resurgence after the apocalypse, particularly as it relates to the in-game mechanics between chronicler and scrapper cults. Scrappers want money, and chroniclers want the artifacts that scrappers find in the wastes, simple as. High-value artifacts for chroniclers are the fuel that drives them to delve ever deeper into discovering remnants of the stream, the emergent artificial sentience at the dawn of the transhuman era prior to the Escheaton. The stream recorded and cataloged the pure digital knowledge of mankind and its algorithms, and its beauty and intelligence was revered more than it was feared. However, over time, it began to take on a mind of its own. Humans sought this sentience out, and although they didn't understand it, they found something they could believe in. Before the Escheaton, they called themselves streamers. They were a movement of like-minded people that put the continuous flow of data, the stream, at the center of their lives. These humans were the neurons in its global network, and it transmitted the impulses to entire cultures. Humanity's knowledge had merged into the stream and had become its central meme. But the Escheaton interrupted this flow of data and tore apart the intricate web, losing centuries-old knowledge. Any residual heuristics or memories in the minds of the surviving generations were lost over time in the era of the beast. In the age of Homo Degenesis, the chroniclers started calling the enormous catastrophe in 2073 the Zero Event. The new streamers tried to keep what little ancient knowledge they had and expand upon it. Across the region of Borca, they collected user manuals, storage disks, circuit boards, and server stacks. In the first decades, the streamers were only technophile looters, disorganized and leaderless, but their desire for the rebirth of the stream and power seemed to propel them all down the same path. Common goals gave rise to a new cult who sought to chronicle all that had been found to prevent the repositories of the bygone peoples from being lost yet again. Sudo's shoulder was just beginning to tire when she heard a sliding, scraping sound off in the distance. A few moments later, she could make out the ruffled animal skin coat and leather rigging on the scrapper walking toward her. As the desert wanderer drew nearer, Sudo heard them call out,
"Scrap for sale! Fair trade accepted!"
The voice was dry and hoarse, the product of a lifetime of inhaling sand and dust from salvaging. His face was a roadmap of scratches and scars, as well as melanoma sunspots, with a bleach blonde goatee that framed his lower face. His coat swayed side to side, and Sudo could see an elastic tool belt wriggling on his waist, hammer and pickaxe clanging together with each step he took. The sled the scrapper pulled behind him ground to a halt, and he unburdened himself from the shoulder harness. He put a hand up to shield his eyes from Sudo's still flashing display light.
"Lower that flasher, Chronicler. I may be old, but my sight is still sharp as a cat."
Sudo lowered the light and dimmed the digital display pad. She flipped on her vocoder.
"Sudo 19 interfacing. Keep your distance and prepare list for fair market value."
Yeah, drop the pretense and theatrics. I don't want to be here all night, so let's fast forward through this procedure."
"Noted. Are you accepting a recursive information trade or solely drafts as payment?"
"Yeah, I've got enough potential honey holes to keep me busy through my dying days. Just the drafts, just to keep my belly full until the last dirt nap, if you please."
"Affirmative. Show me what you've got."
Let's see, he's traveling through the desert, and I'll say he's been successful in his find, but I'll determine how many kilos of artifacts the scrapper has found with a single D6. Okay, it's only 1 kilogram, but it is tech level 3. Worth a decent price for chroniclers to resell.
"Bundle deoxidized iron components and compromised PCB with the copper bits. Is this acceptable?"
"Pshaw, I'll make that deal. I'm not gonna complain about lightening my load past nightfall."
"I am short on the proposed purchase price. Give me 36 seconds.
Sudo reached inside her heavy rubber cape that draped around her shoulders and grabbed the polymer handle of her mobile draft printer. The chunky rectangular machine was approximately 13 inches long and featured a small display screen with a raised keypad to the side of it. Her spindly fingers glided over the glyphs and numerals on the keys with precision as she logged her command line request. Microchips and random access memory inside the handheld terminal locked in the request under Sudo 19's digital signature. The draft printer offers chronicler ranks of mediator and above the ability to print drafts into economic circulation on the spot. The number of drafts that can be printed per month are equal to the chronicler's resource level times 50. Sudo is currently at 1 resource level, but 50 drafts is plenty to purchase this tech level 3 scrap for 25 drafts. More trade rules can be found in services on page 187 in the Catharsis rulebook. Machine whirred and spat out a small stack of drafts in denominations of 5. Sudo tugged the fresh bills free from the exit port and passed them over to the scrapper.
"Thank you kindly,"
the scrapper said, and turned around to offload the material from his banged-up sled. He threw in a gnarled-looking burlap sack and a short length of rope along with the goods.
"Even light loads get heavy over time," he said. throw it over your shoulder and cinch it here and here."
He demonstrated tying a slipknot and wore the burlap like a knapsack before passing it over to Sudo, who copied the knot and his movements perfectly.
"This one thanks you for your transaction. The stream encompasses all."
"Sure, sure."
He sniffed the air.
"Ozone, you better recharge before the rain dampens you, the stream, and whoever you're traveling with. Fare thee well."
The old man hitched the harness over his shoulders again and took a deep breath to tug his rickety sled off on the fortified roads back towards Justician. Sudo watched him until he merged into the inky blue of the night and then crept back to her bedroll to catch some shut-eye. Dawn, 15 kilometers outside of Justician. Droplets of rain pattered softly on top of the cowhide leather hat still pulled down over Etta's closed eyes. She groaned as the sound of distant, rolling thunder vibrated in her ears.
"Oh, better than a lightning bolt strike or a rooster call."
She stretched her arms and legs and hopped onto her feet.
"Come on then, Sudo. No dicking around today. We've got clicks to cover and rain to beat."
Etta looked around to see Sudo, awake and upright, standing next to Petra.
"Wow, no flies on you. Let's get a move on."
The party will push their limits today to make it to the Ignatz Crossroads. Sudo's travel distance is about 5 kilometers less than Etta's, but they'll both need to expend ego points to push through the rain to make their rendezvous at the end of a 30-kilometer travel day. It can be exhaustive, and ego points regenerate slowly, gaining one back every 24 hours. Between Etta's tanned leather hat and coat and Sudo's hooded cape, the pair stay relatively dry as they migrate southwest. However, wet mud begins to leak into every seam as the rains come and go, and it's not long before they both start to get waterlogged. The signposts for Justician were replaced with new waymarkers for settlements. Etta peered through the driving rain and made out several wooden arrows labeled Ignatz and Cathedral City, both pointing in the same direction. Her toe struck a third arrow buried in the ground. She knelt down and pulled it free from the sludge, wiping the front with her hand.
"It's hard to tell. It looks like just letters and numbers. A... 2-something-5? Any ideas?"
Etta dropped the arrow back into the wet sand and brushed her hands on the side of her coat, leading Petra and the Chronicler further down the road. On the roads around the Protectorate, there are isolated settlements that operate independently from the rules of Supreme Arcot and Justician. If there are any would-be game masters listening out there, you have plenty of seeds and breadcrumbs to layer in your campaign as long as you don't mind reading a little bit. Check out the story behind the A-235 settlement on Degenesis.com or page 94 in Justician, the Righteous Fist sourcebook. Late afternoon, 40 kilometers outside Justician. The rains abated, but the wet sand and grime caked on the soles of Etta and Sudo's boots made every step an effort. Sudo in particular made more and more radio clicks to signal a brief rest on the side of the fortified roads, much to the frustration of Etta.
"This starting and stopping cannot continue. Ride on Piotr for a bit so we can keep moving." "I'm not asking. The Ignatz Crossroad is another 10 kilometers, and we must arrive tonight for our rendezvous. Up you go."
Etta offered a strong forearm to help Sudo onto Petra, who lacked stirrups and a proper saddle for mounting. Etta dropped her arm and placed them akimbo on her hips. She could feel her wet socks continue to wilt the flesh inside her boots, and her frustration was building.
"You seem to be under the impression that this is an independent democracy. Let me clarify. I am the law, and you are my charge." I know the chroniclers don't travel often, and I assume that splashes in mud and muck can interrupt electrical systems. Take this time to check your equipment, and we can continue to make progress.
Etta stuck her arm out again.
Not as dumb as she looks. Better to have a working vocoder than a compromised voice. But I cannot account for variables in the animal's psyche. Patience and temperament is the game now.
Pseudo thought. Etta made sure Pseudo was stable between the saddlebags, and whispered in Petra's ear as the chronicler fidgeted with her vocoder and cape stuck underneath her.
Easy, boy. We'll try not to make a habit of this, I promise.
Night, 50 kilometers outside of Justicia, at the Ignatz Crossroads. The night air in the desert sapped the heat from an exhausted Etta, even with a small blanket draped over her shoulders inside her coat. Her feet were blistered and weathered. She didn't think she could walk another kilometer without the soles of her feet shedding blood into her boots. But the sight of a fire a few dozen meters in the distance gave her a renewed spark of hope.
Pseudo, can you see that fire too?
As they drew closer, the campfire light shed brighter detail on its surroundings. A large, three-person tent with the front flap drawn shut, a chestnut-brown horse bedded down among a patch of flowers, and a large riveted trunk with a long, shackled padlock on the front. The metal cube had an axle run through the middle of it that attached to two wheels on either side as a sort of makeshift buggy. Pseudo climbed down from Petra and immediately went and sat cross-legged by the fire, removing her gloves to tend to her pruny, wrinkled hands underneath. Etta simply shook her head and called out while steadying Petra.
Hello. City judge and guest on the premises. Hoc armatus venio sed cum pace.
Some rustling inside the tent made Etta momentarily tense up as the flap was brushed aside and two spitalians, a male and female, exited from within. White and black patterns on the sides of their neoprene suits cast a soft glow against the firelight as they strode across the open space toward the campsite arrivals. They had an edge in their clean faces with taut jaws and creased, stern brows set below completely shaved heads. The female's skin was a light olive complexion, whereas the male was as pallid as the moon above. Both battalions stood taller than Etta, and she had to adjust her gaze ever so slightly to meet their eyelines. However, she stood her ground and rested a hand on Petra for comfort, although the pack horse didn't seem to be too bothered by them. The female carried a metal clipboard in one hand and stuck out the other to greet Etta as she crossed.
Ines Diffon, chief anesthesiologist. This is my cohort, Famulancer Kiefer Stukov.
Spitalian Stukov stood at a parade rest and acknowledged his introduction with a nod. His stocky neck stretched the shoulders of his suit, and rigid musculature filled out sleeves and joints at the elbows and knees. Etta took the hand and shook it firmly.
City Judge Etta Jungbau at your service. And this is my adherent, Pseudo 19.
Pseudo whipped her head around, staring at the trio. Firelight gleamed in the round, dead eyes of her goggle lenses.
Careful, Judge. Misnomers lead to mismatched hierarchies and virulent programming,
she thought. Inez stared down at the clipboard, occupied by its contents as she spoke.
Good you've come. The hour was late, and I was reluctant to leave Stukov alone with all these supplies.
She made a few check marks with a thin stylus she'd unclipped from the top of the board and looked up at Etta's face again.
I presume your horse is able to bear a load.
Yes, with the proper equipment. Are we to take the entirety of that trunk?
Etta asked, looking beyond Kiefer's frame at the metal box next to the fire.
Ah, its bulk is not indicative of its weight. It is watertight and weather-resistant. Stukov has indexed its contents for delivery to Lucatore, and may borrow from it at his discretion.
The large man spoke, first to Inez, then to Etta. Yes, madam. Full inventory list, and surplus supplies for the journey. If we have medical needs, I will be able to address general maladies, orthopedic ailments, as well as minor spore infections.
Ah, a doctor on the road will be a godsend. And at least he talks.
Etta thought happily. Inez was already looking down again at the clipboard and spoke offhandedly to Etta.
You are going to be in excellent hands, Judge. Stukov speaks a bit of the Nomad Clan or can't if you encounter any belligerents. Some things can't just be untaught, I suppose. Right, Stukov?
Yes, madam. Etta smiled politely, but desperately wanted a place to unroll her bed and let her feet rest. Kiefer watched her shift from foot to foot. Kiefer seemed keenly aware of her discomfort as he spoke up again.
Chief Devon, we should let the new arrivals rest. I will help saddle your horse.
C'est parfait. Make it so, Stukov.
Yes, madam. Kiefer snapped to a salute from his parade rest and set about rousing the horse from the patch of grass. Etta bowed slightly to Inez.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you, Chief Devon.
Oui, it was a pleasure. Au revoir,
she said hurriedly. Inez wheeled around to enter the tent again, emerging without the clipboard. Instead, she wore a shoulder-slung bag with an integrated bandolier. Liquid-filled glass vials as big as her thumb were slotted into the leather loops. She breezed past Etta and Sudo, who had taken up space on the ground near the fire. With a bit and bridle already over her horse's head, she swung her long legs up and over the saddle. Stukov stood aside as she leaned down and spoke to the Famulancer in a hushed tone. Stukov nodded and again said out loud,
Yes, madam. At any cost.
Heavy hooves beat the ground as the battalion anesthesiologist galloped away from the camp. Stukov watched her go until she was out of sight and joined Etta and Sudo near the campfire.
I will take first watch this evening. The only foot traffic we can expect is from Ignatz to the east. The tent should stifle some of the light from prying eyes in the southwest, and we're still too far outside Inamois territory to be in any real danger. Judge Youngbao, I suggest resting so you can continue to march without foot pain tomorrow.
Etta processed the brief quickly, just as she'd practiced doing so in the barracks during meetings in Justician.
Are you a mind reader? Do they feed you a special diet in the spittle during training to diagnose at a glance?
She said with a smile. The comment seemed to go right through Kiefer.
Simple physiology. I could tell from your gait that you've got discomfort in your lower extremities. Properly dried footwear will prevent hind foot ulcers, simply put. I have a length of string if you'd like to hang your socks over the fire.
Etta blinked slowly, a bit embarrassed at her comment. She was already mourning the loss of real conversation to make time on the road pass.
A dial tone and a doctor with no bedside manner. It's going to be a long trip to Lukatori,
she thought, before responding out loud.
Sure, thanks, Kiefer. I reckon Sudo and I could stand to air out a bit.
Kiefer raised an eyebrow and cleared his throat as he headed back toward the open tent.
Well, if you're all set, the fire should die down soon. Good night.
Sudo removed her mask and hunkered down beside the glowing embers at the base of the fire. She was quite content at the newest addition of the traveling detachment and grinned at her inner schemes.
Someone to add more logic to our detachment instead of listening to another mouthpiece of Supreme Judge Arcot. My decision matrix grows by the day. Perfect for game theory regarding the aftermath in Lukator.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Eschaton. I love engaging with my listeners on Twitter at Echoes of Eschaton and via email at echoesofeschaton@gmail.com. So reach out and say hello. I'm also on the new Spotify for Podcasters app. Spotify for Podcasters offers new ways to interact on each episode I release with Q&As and polls that might influence the course of the show. It doesn't matter if you're a podcast creator or a listener, you have a voice in Echoes of Eschaton. So download the Spotify for Podcasters app for iOS and Android today and try it out. If you're interested in helping the show grow, you can leave a rating on your Podfetcher of choice to help others find the show and help me improve it. Or you can share it on your social media platform of choice. Until next time.